So what do you think the fighting game community is all about?
Apparently rampant sexism and passive aggressive behavior.
That's what I thought too, you know? I mean, it's been around for so long, that's been such a big part of it. That's a core element, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, you would just expect it from the way people play on Xbox Live. And I don't know why we're surprised.
Yeah, well, I mean, Xbox Live, you have the full range of hate speech.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got sexism, you've got racism, you've got homophobia, you've got your mama jokes from 10-year-olds. You know, it's a special place.
I was so what disturbs me so much about the fighting game aspect is that as we see professional game leagues become more and more valid as, you know, sports and, you know, recreation and even as entertainment, we don't need these jackasses representing us because we already have to fight with the Xbox Live stereotypes. People are always complaining about how Xbox Live represents who gamers are, and we're all 12-year-old homophobes. You know, I don't want this fat bearded jackass speaking for me and saying that the fighting game community is all about sexism, and if you can't take it, you need to leave.
Yeah.
That offends me as a gamer because he now looks like, or makes you and I look like him.
Yeah,
Because that's what people see.
I don't mind having a beard, but you know what? I keep it neatly trimmed for the most part. And I'm content with that. He makes bearded people look bad, so I'm offended as a bearded person. I'm offended as a Middle Eastern person. And I'm offended as a gamer. I'm offended across all kinds of ranges here.
It was when I saw the picture of him, I really laughed because, of course, that's the guy that, you know, he probably has never spoken to a real woman anyway, but we get a bad enough rap. You know, every time we have school shootings, like even the most recent one, people were throwing Modern Warfare in the mix and saying that that's motivation. We get a bad rap for everything. And when we finally start coming out of the woodwork and people are seeing video games as a sport, and then you have this guy act like an asshole, that's what people remember. That's what people see on CNN and see on Fox. And you know what, man? Like, you're representative for the community. Whether you like it or not, you need to act accordingly.
True, but on the other hand, you're always going to have that kind of person. I mean, I could say Michael Vick, and people get the negative connotation of dogfighting and batshit craziness, not really remembering that he was a good football player. He was just batshit crazy and fought dogs.
But you know, there's more football players
I
that
mean,
have
he
spotlights.
didn't fight the dogs. I mean, he had the dogs, and the dogs fought. So just to clear that up for any non-sports fans.
I would have liked to seen the dogs go after him personally, but
It could have been
you know,
fun.
I just feel that we don't get a lot of press. There aren't, you know, however many hundreds of people are in the National Football League that get press. We only have a couple handful of people. So for right now, I feel like it's almost more crystallized in this guy when the mom's watching television and she sees this as like all fighting game people, we like to make fun of women and call them bitches constantly. That's what they see and that's what they think their kids are getting into.
Right.
That's why it bothers me. If there are more positive role models, or if people watch StarCraft, who the community of StarCraft is great. There's a lot of communities out there for games, especially on PC, that are, you know, great communities and really generous and kind and good people. They're not the ones getting press yet, so
Right.
that's what's sad.
Definitely. And I don't know, this guy, well, first of all, this is all happening under Capcom's nose, and Capcom is just reprehensible right now for so many reasons that this one isn't really that surprising, or even the biggest reason to dislike Capcom right now, because at least they put out a press release apology for whatever that's worth.
Well, yeah, the apology that someone offended somebody else, hey, we're sorry you were offended thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The apology that's not an apology.
No, of course not.
What really bothered me was the announcers, you know, a couple days after it really went public, making the jokes while they were covering the event. You know, so you go from somebody that's on a team to the actual announcers who are under Capcom's thumb and under their employment saying the same crap and making fun of women for being in it and making fun, like just sexist comments. That I thought was the real kicker. And Capcom, I don't know if they ever responded to that. I didn't see them come out against those guys, but that was the real offensive part to me.
Yeah, Capcom, we could do another whole episode on Capcom.
Yeah.
I did a review for Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom today, which, depending on when this goes up, will be yesterday or today.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I really hate what they did with Marvel vs. Capcom 3 and then Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom, I ended up having to give the game a good score because it was a good game.
Right.
The problem is that it was what Marvel vs. Capcom should have been in the first place. And Capcom knew that, and Capcom went ahead and did it for a particular reason. I mean, Capcom, god damn it.
Yeah, they love to do stuff like that, though. Give incomplete experiences and then sell you a complete one later for the same price. Yeah, that's a whole shady practice, and I get very upset with that. But they are just trying to make money. Having some jackass go out there and outright insult and defame women to the point where, you know, one was throwing a match just to get away from the guy.
Yeah.
That's harassment, and that's the sort of thing that Capcom needs to come out against, say that we don't stand for that, and boot that guy the hell out of there. He should never be getting support from Capcom again. And
it's absolutely not.
Capcom is just sort of letting it slide and hoping that it blows over.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, in order to get into this, whatever it was, I guess it was kind of a reality promotion thing for Street Fighter Cross Tekken.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it Street Fighter Cross or is it Tekken Cross? I can never remember.
There's
which.
Both, because one's going to be on the Tekken engine, one's going to be on the Street Fighter engine.
Right, but one's coming out later than the other one, right?
Oh, yeah, I don't remember which one's first.
All right. Well, whichever one it is that they were doing. To get on that show, the girl who actually threw the fight,
yeah,
she had to be good. She is probably a competitive gamer if she's going to be a fighting game enthusiast.
Yeah.
So for a competitive gamer who is competitive enough and good enough to get into that kind of promotional event and to perform there, to go ahead and just throw a fight and then throw the next fight,
mm-hmm.
you got to believe that there was something really bothering her about that whole situation, because that has to be really important to her about winning that fight and proving herself good at the game, regardless of whether she's a she or a he or whatever. The gamer desire to prove yourself better than whoever you're fighting against.
Right. And that's what's so interesting, is that those, like, the fighting community definitely does have the male-centric appearance. I think a lot of people would be surprised to see girls being in there and competing professionally. So I think that they should be out in the forefront and they should be advertised and celebrated. I mean, honestly, it's great. We should be an inclusive hobby. We shouldn't be dismissive of these people that are accomplishing obviously more than you or I could do in fighting games.
Yeah.
And then to just sort of treat them like second-class citizens when they get in and then laugh when they get upset at harassment is, it's ridiculous. I mean, this is barbaric, you know, 1920s thinking. I just can't get my head around it.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a pretty ridiculous situation that, I mean, let's see, what was it he was saying here? I've got the transcript of Eris, the guy, the bearded bastard. someone asked him, can I get my Street Fighter without sexual harassment? And he said, you can't because they're one and the same thing. This is a community that's 15 or 20 years old, and sexual harassment is part of a culture. And if you remove that from the fighting game community, it's not the fighting game community. Mm. And yeah, that's that whole attitude and perspective is just ridiculous. That a core element of enjoying a game is being disrespectful to a portion of the human population.
Right. And what is most surprising to me is, why would he think that? I understand that he grew up in a vacuum playing with his friends and had very little contact with women. But do people not understand that when you get out into the broader world and when you go out in public, you can't just act like a jackass?
Yeah.
it's absolutely shocking to me that he would think that an integral part of a fighting game is communication of any kind. You know, people were playing fighting games that were just sitting next to each other on the couch. And I know people play games online where they don't even talk to the people they're playing with. Communication isn't even an essential part of it, let alone the sexual harassment. I just don't get where his logic comes from, besides the fact that he wants to be able to be a prick and he thinks that he's hilarious and should be celebrated for it.
Yeah, well, it's like I could say you can't enjoy the Cabela big game hunter or NASCAR games or monster truck games without also being a hillbilly. Being a hillbilly is part of the NASCAR, Cabela's, mm-hmm. hunter, all this kind of stuff community, and without it, it's just not that community anymore.
Right.
No offense to any hillbillies or non-hillbilly fans of those games, but you can carry that over to so many different things that it becomes completely ridiculous.
Yeah, there's a lot of really painful analogies you can bring with this that when you put his logic to the test, it's really just one step from the people that are, you know, rape apologists and the people that are accepting of hitting your woman occasionally. She talks about, like, it's really bordering on absolutely sociopathic logic.
Absolutely.
And that's, yeah, it's really disturbing, and he should be drummed out of the circle. Capcom should have completely disowned this guy, kicked him out, and everyone in the community should be standing up and saying, yeah, this guy's an asshole, instead of circling their wagons and trying to defend him.
Oh, I absolutely agree. No one should be defending the guy, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, disappointment to the whole community in general, because they really tried to take up for the guy because their community was being attacked, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, it was being attacked because your guy was a jackass and you should completely step away from him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really wish they would have. Maybe they still will, but very disappointing all around.
Yeah. Well, this is episode 19 of Marooners Talk. We are a very enlightened bunch here, which is why our episode title is Stop Playing Tekken and Make Me a Sandwich. which I haven't had lunch, so sandwich actually is sounding pretty good.
Yeah, I'm glad you put that after the conversation so people realize it's sarcasm.
Yes, I figured that would be the best way to do it.
Definitely.
I wouldn't want to get lynched or have the site attacked or anything. That'd suck.
Yeah, and I imagine that if you really felt or said that seriously, Lindsay would probably come up and smack you.
Oh, she's sitting right next to me. If I was saying it seriously, you would have heard a very loud smack and some things falling over as I tumbled into the table or something.
Yeah, see, that. God, and it's just so strange that, you know, I'm sure she's gone on Xbox Live and had people harass her just because she's a woman and you know, for whatever reason, and I just don't understand it. Don't we like girls? Like, I would love to have more girls play games. Like, I'm a fan of women. Why would I want to try to get them away from my hobby?
Right.
I don't want to hang out with all dudes all the time. That's
no.
Yeah. No.
Speaking of all dudes all the time, I actually have no segue for that. So Assassin's Creed 3 has a trailer out today. Which, hey, you know what? All dudes, there were all dudes in the trailer. There you go.
That's true.
Segue.
And really, in most of the games, there's not really a whole lot of female presence in those things.
Not a lot, no. And, you know, they usually don't end up surviving or being happy. usually bad things happen.
Right.
Wow, man, Assassin's Creed really is a sexist kind of game, isn't it?
It kind of is. Sadly. So still like them, but
Well, so we got a great new trailer today, showing us our first glimpse at, I don't know if it was actual gameplay or if it was just, you know, a created video. Or I assume it was made using the gameplay engine.
Mm-hmm.
And I gotta say, I'm pretty excited. I love the American Revolution as a historical period, and I think it'll be a lot of fun playing in that and having some sort of impact on what happens in that period of history.
I think you and I talked about it, I think, over Twitter comments. I'm concerned about what you're going to be scaling and the cities that they're going to be in, because, you know, 1700s was not exactly a time of great cities and industrialization. But, you know, watching the trailer, I'm a huge American history buff as well. I think it could be really cool how they weave his role in the revolution into the story. I, again, after the last game with the tower defense stuff and the car chasing and all that insanity, I am really hoping they get back into the core gameplay and the core storyline. If so, then I'm going to be back on board for the series. And I was pretty much dismissive of it until I saw this trailer. So,
yeah, it looks like the trees, for the most part, are going to be replacing the buildings. At least that's what my assumption is, that the forest is going to be built in such a way where you can essentially parkour through it, kind of climb up fast, fly through the trees. And then it's supposed to take place, part of it in Boston, I think, is something that leaked out last week.
Okay, so then that would be excellent. And I think the tree thing, you know, in the wintertime, he's not going to be able to hide real well up in barren trees. But the concept's really interesting. You know, maybe learning from Native American tactics and things like that. It was a good move. I was really hoping we'd hit modern day with the third series and we just kind of have a trilogy to end Desmond. Looks like that won't be the case, but I think that they might finally be rejuvenating the series, and it drastically needed it.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. As far as him hiding in the trees, if he's wearing white and it's going to be wintry and he's very still, then he may be able to do that. But yeah, with the way you were able to move around on the rooftops, it's going to be a different experience, I think.
Yeah, and there won't be people to jump in the middle of, you know, climb over a building and, hey, I'm going to sit on this couch.
Right.
But I don't know. I think it could be good. And I'm hoping that concept of not being able to just be in a city and hide amongst people makes them bring in entirely new gameplay tactics and entirely new ways of hiding. Because, yeah, man, I got a little bit bored of running through Italy and doing the same moves every single time.
See, so I didn't. I thought it was just done so well that I can pick it up and I can just enjoy running around. I don't even have to be, because I finished the game. I'm just looking for the rest of the collectible items now whenever right. I do put it in. Even without mm-hmm. looking for the collectible items, I can put it in and I can spend half an hour or an hour just running around, scaling things, jumping off of things, killing little groups of guards that I feel like killing for whatever reason, you know. It's one of those where any one of them, I can put them in and start enjoying it. Although it's harder to enjoy the first one now, obviously, since the mechanics were so greatly improved for the second.
Yeah.
And 2.5 and 2.9 and whatever.
I just, I felt it was a little bit stale after time. I love open world games, and I think Assassin's Creed 2 was great. I still didn't really like the fighting mechanics, the hand-to-hand stuff, but everything else I thought was pretty great, and I, you know, ran through the game for hours just exploring and finding stuff, and I really love that. I just want new settings and maybe new weapons and new experiences without trying to do things like tower defense and whatever the hell they did with Revelations.
I've never been a big fan of the actual hand-to-hand, like, having a sword fight with anyone in any of the games. It's never been the strength of it, I think, and it's never really clicked with me. When I play, I'm always going up behind someone and hidden blading them or getting them at a range. It's not the best, I don't think, melee mechanic for when you're actually face-to-face with someone or surrounded
by... Not at all. That was always my biggest problem. But, Ubisoft does some awesome trailers. Like, they've got some of the best trailers out there, and they managed to rejuvenate my excitement just by what it looks like they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
And moving it to America alone and moving it, you know, 100 years or so further into the future, I think that's good. And it's the old team, so I'm on board for now. I'm on board.
Yeah. It should be a good game. I mean, they've done, I think, a really good job so far of even they've introduced new gameplay elements to a certain extent with Brotherhood and then with Revelations, and they did improve on the graphics and all that kind of stuff as much as they could within the same engine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the best part about having Brotherhood and Revelations was just because you got so much more story. And it was essentially turning 2 from a, you know, however many hours you could get out of 2. And then with Brotherhoods and with Revelation, you're making one game that's, you know, 3 times as long as the first version on its own.
Yeah. There's something to that, but I also feel like, you know, you can condense your story a little bit. I don't want to have to play through all 3 games because I didn't like the mechanics of... Brotherhood was okay. Revelations, like I said, that first few sections that were so bizarre. Like there's a racing thing and then the tower defense and stuff like that. That wasn't what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, for Revelations, you don't have to do the tower defense much after that point. It just depends on what your focus is in the game. If you are focusing on that aspect of it, of going and capturing all of the dens and maintaining all of the dens and maintaining control over the city, then yeah, you're going to be doing tower defense a lot. If you're focused on the story, then you really don't have to do it as often, other than I think that first essentially introduction to tower defense section.
It started bordering on a Capcom like cash grab. Where or more Activision actually annualizing the franchise instead of making, like, the jump between 1 and 2 was incredible. I think they did a great job, and I would rather them wait, 2 years between games to make a really complete experience, because even, you know, Brotherhood was a nice extension of the story, but it still didn't feel like as full of a game as number 1 or number 2. So I want a full experience, and I think 3 is going to be that way.
I hope so. That's what I'm looking forward to, for the jump from 1 to 2 to exist between 2 and 3.
Yeah, and I have faith in that team, and if this is what they've been doing for the last couple years, I think that's what we'll see.
Now, we talked that they had their new trailer out today, actually. And shortly after that, they actually managed to come out with a second trailer, which was identical to the first trailer, except it had a better soundtrack to it. And I know that the trend, I don't know why this is the trend, but the trend in trailers seems to be going towards dubstep. And apparently yeah. Ubisoft loves dubstep. I know they are just crazy about it over there for some reason. But, you know, you had Far Cry, and then from 2K... from Gearbox, you had Borderlands 2, and apparently that was a dubstep trailer as well.
Yep, it was.
And there's this big presence of dubstep. It's the new fad. And so I'm very glad to see that they went away from that with the second version of the Assassin's Creed 3 trailer. It's a classic song. It is an American classic, and it is very fitting with the American setting of the game.
That's what it tells a narrative.
It does.
With trailer. That's
it does. I think the it explains part. To you why America is such a great setting for this third game. So if there are any doubters about, you know, revolutionary America being a good setting for Assassin's Creed, this trailer will set those doubts to rest. I'll go ahead and link to it in the article, because there's not really much I can do here other than play the song, and it doesn't really have as much impact as when you're watching it. If you're listening, go ahead and see the article that we're going to put up for the podcast either today or tomorrow, and find the link and enjoy. I did. I hope you do too.
definitely. I think that's the one that they should be pushing a little bit more. I don't know why it's not linked everywhere.
Absolutely. And hopefully it becomes linked everywhere, because I think it's still pretty fresh. So Twitter will get its hands on it and spread it around, I hope.
Excellent.
But, you know, look at it tomorrow if you're not playing Mass Effect 3 or something all day.
yeah.
Which actually,
which will be my job.
Yeah, that'll be you. I started playing the first Mass Effect. Again, last time I played it was in 2010. And I got the first two achievements, which I guess is something about Eden Prime and then becoming a Spectre.
Close enough.
No, yeah, and then I stopped.
Yeah, I'm going to have to wiki the storylines. I mean, I played through two. I think I've played it three or four times. And I've played number one a few times. You know, I've got I did Mass Effect 2 on the PS3, but I also did 1 and 2 on the Xbox. So I've got games everywhere. I'm getting it for both systems. I'm going to play through with all my characters. Yeah, I'm insane. My favorite thing about Mass Effect 3, I finally looked at the achievements and trophies for it. I was really worried about the multiplayer because I played the beta they put out there and I thought it was interesting, but it's a fine shooter. Mass Effect 2 was solid, but it wasn't a Gears of War or a Halo. It wasn't a shooter game. I don't want to play multiplayer. It didn't really feel like it belonged whatsoever. And they took all the trophies that you can achieve in multiplayer and they put a single player component to it. So you can earn all the same bonuses in game that you get for the multiplayer in the single player. So
it'll say, you know, do this single player or multiplayer.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that's good.
So you can play multiplayer and get the galaxy ready and collect these resources, or you can do single player missions and get the same resources and the same benefit. So I think that's a fantastic idea, and I wish that more people would do that instead of shoehorning forced multiplayer into the game.
Yeah. Now, I haven't played the demo. I know there's kind of like a horde mode, essentially, or a firefight mode.
Yeah, that's basically what it is.
But are there other modes that are more supplementary to the campaign?
It kind of. Like, you go on these N7 missions, and they'll sort of expose you to what the maps are in multiplayer. But if you play the multiplayer, then yeah, it's basically just horde mode, wave after wave of enemies. To a certain point, you have some jobs in between, like, hey, hack this computer, protect this thing, and go back and forth, and then you can earn resources that way and earn reputation and loyalty of people that way. But I'm probably going to bypass it and just go straight to the missions, because I'd rather get story and that part of it out of the way instead of just playing with a bunch of random people fighting over who kills who.
Right. Now, you say you earn resources and reputation. Does that fold back into the campaign?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So if I were to start and start it in multiplayer, then you could essentially kind of boost yourself up before starting the campaign?
Yes. I think the resources and the galaxy preparedness doesn't necessarily affect your single player experience, except for the story and how much of the galaxy is going against the Reapers, et cetera, et cetera. But you could get that stuff early and then not have to worry about it later. I'm not 100% positive how it's going to work, obviously, yet till I get to play with it tomorrow. But
right.
It's an interesting idea, and I'm glad that if EA was going to force multiplayer onto a series, they were able to still keep the single player experience untouched.
Yeah. Well, that's good, because like I said, I started playing the first one. I couldn't stand it 2 years ago, but
mm-hmm.
I'm semi enjoying it and semi powering through it. Because everyone's told me, you and everyone else I've talked to, that Mass Effect 2 improves leaps and bounds on the gameplay. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And that's really the only problem with 1 was just terrible gameplay and inventory, too. God, the inventory was awful.
Yeah, I'm not too fond of the inventory.
Yeah. Yeah, burn through. Mass Effect 3 also has that weird story mode, action mode, and RPG mode. I don't know if you saw that, where if you select to play it in story mode, it cuts out most of the action, and you really just play through the dialogue, which is kind of a conversation we had a few weeks ago.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, isn't? And then action mode, it makes all the decisions for you, so you don't actually have to make those decisions and those experiences that I think make up the core of Mass Effect. It does it for you, and you really just go through combat scenarios and do the fighting part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then RPG is supposedly the traditional.
Mm.
But I thought that was the story mode just sounds really strange to me. Why you'd want to cut out all of the action, and the action mode seems odd because why would you want to cut out all of the decisions and how you play the game? Because that affects who lives, it affects so much stuff.
That's really strange to me too, because you have half a game or you have half a game or you have the whole game. Why would you play half the game when you could play the whole game?
Yeah.
Because part of the whole game is navigating your way through the story just as much as fighting your way through the story.
Yeah, and like in the second game, you know, gathering the resources to upgrade your ship has a direct effect on who survives to get to the final mission, and who you select to go with you on the final mission affects how many people live, who, like, you know, a lot of characters can die or everyone can live. You might even fail the entire mission at the end of the game. And those are all decisions, so taking that away and making it automatically seems like it would be a cheap way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, story mode, it has to be a really pretty game with a lot of really pretty cutscenes and really well done. And the first one doesn't seem like it's held up very well. It looks really grainy to me.
Mm-hmm.
The second one, I've been watching Lindsay play, and it looks a lot better. Although her femme chef is extremely derpy. she's got a massive overbite. When she runs and looks to the side as she's running, she actually lolls her head and, like, runs with one arm down and one arm up. I mean, this is the biggest herp derp motion capture whatever I've seen in a long time, and it's fun to watch.
I wish you had video of that.
I might capture some later this week.
Definitely do it, because I'm curious. The default Shepard for the demo, Femme Shep anyway, looks really bad too. I was kind of disturbed by how awful she looked. Which is sad.
But yeah, and so I'm hoping that 3 improves even more on 2 visually, so that, I mean, at least if you're playing the story mode, because you don't care about, I mean, you really like the story, but you don't want to do too much of that fighting,
mm-hmm.
then at least you have that, as if you're just watching an interactive film.
Yeah, just the situation seems weird. I'm probably going to try all 3 modes to see the difference, but it could be awesome and innovative, could also be kind of ridiculous and gimmicky.
Yeah. I can't see it as something that I would want to do at all. I enjoy story. I enjoy gameplay. I enjoy both of them. If I have the option to have both, then definitely. I'm not going to cut one out for any particular reason.
Right.
So.
Well, it'll be interesting. I'm sure it'll sell like gangbusters tomorrow. I'm going to the midnight release tonight, so we'll see how that goes over.
Well, Lindsay's been telling me either to go to the midnight release at a GameStop here in town to pick up a collector's edition for her, or to go into work 2 hours late tomorrow so that I can pick one up from Best Buy. And we're leaning towards Best Buy because we like the points.
Yeah, yeah.
And we don't like GameStop. And it means I get to sleep in a little later and go to work later, so that's nice too.
Well, that's a total win right there. That's enough motivation for it.
Yeah.
I'm picking it up from GameStop tonight, but I kind of am leaning with you. I'm going to start shifting over to Best Buy, I think, after my experiences with GameStop the last few times.
Yeah.
But I am getting the collector's edition for PS3 and then a normal edition for 360, and spend this since I'm on spring break this week, I will be doing nothing but playing that game.
Nice.
Yeah, good timing.
I get 3 weeks of vacation starting next week, so Mass Effect 1 will be finished, 2, then 3, then I can refinish again, maybe for a second. I might go through a full second play, and then maybe even a third play of Binary Domain.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, man. You said you got to play some? Did you play the game or the demo?
The demo.
Okay. What did you think? I haven't played the demo, so I don't know if it's indicative.
I was really curious about the voice command between, obviously, PS3, you can use headset, and then Xbox, you can use Kinect.
Right.
Very weird. both ways didn't work perfectly for me, but I love the concept. I think it handled it better than even Mass Effect is going to handle the Kinect commands. So I'm starting to come around on the game. The more I think about it, the more I see about it, the more I think that I need to pick it up.
I agree with that sentiment. I'm worried that for Sega, it'll be another Vanquish in that it may not get as much recognition or commercial success as it should in order to guarantee more of that kind of game from them. Mm-hmm. Well, from their developers, not from Sega first party. But yeah, it's definitely, it was surprisingly good for me. I was expecting it to be good because we saw it at E3 last year.
Mm-hmm.
But it was better than I remember it, and it was better than I was expecting it to be.
It reminds me, I'm glad you brought up Vanquish. It reminds me of a game sort of like that where it's a genre that we see a lot of, but they're doing something totally different with it. And God knows we need to see more of that stuff happen.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate it. Even if it didn't work at all, I would still like to see them try, but it works pretty impressively well, everything that they're doing with the game. So even without the voice command playing through the demo, it worked great. I really enjoyed it without the gimmicks with it.
Mm. Now, on your PS3, do you have a pretty decent headset?
I've got a Turtle Beach for it, yeah.
Okay. I was using Nox Audio when I was playing on the PS3, which we got like a week and a half ago or so. We got it, and I was playing through it on the PS3 first. And the Nox Audio, I guess it's a so-so headset. It's not particularly great,
mm-hmm.
But it's not a terrible headset. I was getting maybe a 60 to 80% recognition, and acceptance on the commands I was giving. And then I was having an issue with the noise filter, picking up some of Lindsay playing Mass Effect 2.
Mm-hmm.
And like I'd be in the middle of combat, and it's cool because the trust mechanic I think is really awesome, the way they have that implemented. And if you perform really well in combat, then the trust level of your allies in relation to you goes up. They'll compliment you on your prowess, and they'll, you know, begin to trust you a little more. However, it would pick up either complete silence, me whispering something, or Lindsay's TV making some noise, and all of a sudden in the middle of combat, my guy would be yelling, fuck, or, you know, shit like that. And they would lose trust in me because they thought I was falling apart in the heat of battle. Or in the middle of a conversation, all of a sudden it says, you're an idiot. And I'm like, no, what? Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, when I was trying to actually say something, sometimes I'd have to yell in order for it to recognize my voice. And so it was really frustrating for me. But then we got the 360 edition, and I tried it out with the Triton Detonator headset. Much better mm-hmm. headset. And got 100% recognition on it.
I was getting probably 80, 90%. I tried turning on, I think I was watching Archer or something at the time, just to see how it would handle background noise. And I got a lot of miscues from that. It would definitely pick that up. And I got Turtle Beaches on the Xbox as well. Everything seemed to work about the same between the two. Mm. I mean, probably about 90%. But again, I was less enamored with that and more enamored by the sort of the enemies and the design and the sort of the pacing of it, I think, is what was most enjoyable.
Oh, I loved the story, and the cutscenes were beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they did a fantastic job with that. And then the procedural damage on the enemies made it a lot of fun. I loved just sitting there and headshotting robots until they'd start shooting each other. That was a great mechanic.
Yeah, there's a lot of really, really great sort of ideas and concepts behind it. And I love that for a while, Sega was the publisher that I was most wary of.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind
of. I can understand that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff they did. I think since the Genesis, really, they kind of burned themselves into the ground. And in the last few years, they've really become a pretty reliable publisher, to at least as far as creativity goes.
Yeah. No, I can get behind that. They've had, I mean, they still have their misses every now and then, but they've had a really strong, especially the last couple of years have been really strong for them as a publisher. I mean, you had Bayonetta, Vanquish, Sonic Generations, Binary Domain. What else have they done in the last couple of years? I don't really care for the Mario and Sonic Olympics stuff that much.
Yeah, no.
But that's more just me not liking the minigame game, essentially.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
I mean, Mario Party is fun if you have four people and you're playing it for a little bit, but then I get bored with it. But then they've had some good downloadable games as well.
Yeah.
So, no, they've been strong the last couple of years. And it's been nice because growing up, I was a Sega kid. I was a Genesis kid. I was a Dreamcast guy. I mean, Sega was my jam.
Yeah.
I had all the other stuff too, but Sega was where my heart was. So it's nice to see them back where they should be.
Definitely. And they probably got stuff coming out too that the Aliens franchise and stuff like that I enjoy. They put out the Yakuza franchise, which I enjoy, but getting platinum games I think was really good for them.
Oh, absolutely. I'm looking forward to Anarchy Reigns this summer. It was supposed to be out in January, but they delayed it to June, I think. And that's one. It's another Platinum Games title, and I'm really excited for it.
Me too. You and me both. And I hope it gets more press before it pops. We'll see, though.
Yeah, they had a pretty steady run of press late last year, where they were releasing character profiles and they were releasing trailers. And then as soon as they had to bump the date, it all just dried up. So I have a feeling that, you know, maybe in April or May, they'll start that churning again and start rebuilding that anticipation and that media presence, I suppose. Because there was no point in them continuing that 6 or 7 months before the game was going to come out now.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. And if not, you know, I hope it at least does the sort of burn that Vanquish and Bayonetta did for them.
Yeah. That's... I'm really sad about those and Mad World because all such good games from such a good developer and they didn't get the, you know, commercial respect that they should have gotten.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes me sad for Platinum Games especially because that's not... I mean, that kind of hurts their track record commercially. Although, if anyone looks at the titles critically, you can't help but be impressed.
Yeah, they definitely score very, very well.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah. I'm going to look forward to picking up Binary Domain, but I don't think I'm going to get out of Mass Effect anytime soon, so might have to wait a few weeks, but...
Yeah, and that's fine, but it was surprisingly good for me. I'm very happy that I have that, because like Vanquish I can play through and play through and play through, and I think Binary Domain is going to be like that. Taking different squad members with you, you have different conversations, you can build up trust with different people depending on all kinds of things. So you can modify the story a little bit every time you play through. And then the multiplayer. Totally forgot about the multiplayer.
All right. Have you played it that much?
The multiplayer I played a bit of, enough to kind of get a sense for. And it's good. I mean, the mechanics are the same. The graphics are the same, and the animations are the same. That's all the same. There's just not really much of a story. It's mostly objective-based stuff, team versus team.
Mm-hmm.
There's free-for-all as well, but it's mostly team versus team with, you know, planting bombs, disarming bombs, all kinds of stuff like that. There's a horde firefight mode called Invasion, I think. And that's pretty fun as well. I don't think that it's going to be... I wouldn't buy Binary Domain because of its multiplayer longevity.
Right.
I think it's going to be one of those where it has a community for a short while, and then that community moves on from it.
That's the problem with every multiplayer. That's why I was so upset when they shoehorned it into Mass Effect and they put Uncharted and all these other games that I love to play and want to get all the achievements for. Because you know what? In a few months, it's gone. This is a hilarious story. I put in Resistance 3. It came out in September. I put it in over December. There was no one on.
Yeah.
Couldn't find a game. So, yeah, that really upsets me when they put that into games. I'm afraid to even start playing them in case I get hooked.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's too bad because it's a fun thing to add in. But, I mean, if you're going to do it well.
Mm-hmm.
But making it a major selling point, I think, is a mistake. Unless you are going to dedicate the resources and the time and the effort to really make it big and to maintain it and to keep it going. Because you have stuff coming out for Halo. You have stuff coming out for Call of Duty and for all these other, the real top-tier multiplayer games that you can pretty much always jump into and know that you're going to find a game.
Yeah.
It's because they're providing that support and that maintenance, I suppose, in order to keep it going. And part of it, I don't see that happening for Binary Domain. I don't see Sega putting out a lot of stuff to keep people interested in it 2 months from now, 3 months from now.
Right.
Or any of those other games, really, that are like that. It's, you have to be willing to put the money and the time and the effort into keeping it in everyone's, in the forefront of everyone's attention.
And that's sort of the problem with having a publisher like Sega who isn't rolling in Call of Duty money. They really have to be careful with how they market and how they support post-release. And it's kind of sad because they release some of the coolest games out there, but they can't necessarily make headway against some of those giant publishers.
Yeah. That's too bad. Yeah. But, you know, it's fun multiplayer. It just, I can't see it lasting. So if you're for anyone listening, if you're a multiplayer fan, don't buy it just because it has multiplayer. As fun as it is, it's not going to last you long enough to make it worth the cost.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
But it's good that it's a solid enough campaign where it doesn't rely on that for replayability.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I absolutely will play the campaign again over my vacation at least once. I don't doubt it.
Yeah, because I know we saw that shift for a while, and I'm hoping that it's starting to fade away where single-player experiences were being truncated in order to try to build a multiplayer community, whether it was there or not.
Yeah.
Call of Duty, obviously, is the biggest offender. Like, you know, four-hour campaigns, and they expect everyone to just do the multiplayer. I was worried when they announced it for Mass Effect because I thought they might pull the team off, but looks like they didn't. It sounds like the campaign will be a full enough experience. But, yeah, I would much rather them concentrate on the single-player and chuck the multiplayer or have somebody else do it in a completely separate vacuum from the single-player campaign.
Yeah. Lindsay's playing Mass Effect 2 again, one of the DLCs, I think. And, she's at this point where she's in the hammerhead, and she's trying to cross this lava flow.
Oh, God, I hate that.
The lava flow has these, like, moving platforms of solid rock. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those where you have to kind of hop from rock to rock and get across, except the rocks start sinking when you land on them. I hate that kind of thing.
The additional content for Mass Effect 2 was pretty bad. Kasumi's Revenge was good. There are a few cool side missions. But that the one that she's on now, what's it called?
Which DLC are you playing?
Overlord.
That one was so bad. It was just frustrating and sometimes made me want to kill myself. And the arrival, I thought, was so short and truncated. I was very upset. So, yeah.
Well, and you know, that's something I thought of earlier and I forgot about. I didn't know this until over the weekend, but apparently the PS3 version of Mass Effect 2 comes with all the DLC except for the Arrival.
Yep.
Whereas the 360 version comes with none of that. For the exact same price.
Because they... I kind of understand why, because obviously we got it a year later on PS3.
Oh, okay.
And none of that was available, and they were trying to pull people in like, hey, we know you can't play the first game. sorry about that, but here we'll give you some free DLC and that interactive comic book. Maybe you'll still like the game.
See, that's the thing. I forgot that the first Mass Effect was PC and 360.
Yeah.
And not PS3. Okay. Well, I guess that makes a little more sense, at least, because they didn't get the first one. They can at least have some more on the second one.
Yeah, I think that's okay. I don't like it when they hold content ransom for people.
Right.
That kind of bothers me. And if they had come out at the same time and one got... I hate exclusive DLC. I think that's bullshit as well. But I think they handled it okay, especially because PS3 owners will never be able to play Mass Effect 1, which right. Maybe that's a good thing. Who knows?
Yeah, this far along, I'm glad I'm playing it before. I'm glad I'm playing through it now before playing 2 or 3, because I know from watching Lindsay, if I wanted to play 2 and then go back to 1, I wouldn't want to do it at all.
Yeah.
It would be like playing Assassin's Creed 2 and then playing Assassin's Creed 1.
Well, yeah, exactly. Because one was... lucky the story was so good in number one, because that's what kept me playing.
Yeah, that was its saving grace, was its contribution to the story. And I'm very glad that I played it first.
Yeesh.
Yeah. So Steam might be coming out with a console.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to mention that one. That was great news. As somebody who's avoided PCs for God knows how many years now, just because they're such a pain in the ass. Mm-hmm. If I could get one that runs like a freaking console and I can just plug in the game and go and I don't have to worry about buying new video cards and all that crap, I would be ecstatic.
That's what I don't get, because it's going to be... I mean, there's a reason you have to keep buying new video cards and keep upgrading all of this stuff with PC games, is because the PC games keep coming out bigger and better and bigger and better, and forcing people to do that in order to get the right quality. So what's going to happen in a year or in 2 years, when really that hardware life cycle in the Steam box or whatever it's going to be called reaches its end and the games are being put out with more than the Steam box can handle? You're going to end up back in that, either get the new version of the Steam box, or you're going to get upgrade parts for the Steam box or whatever.
And that's what I'm curious about. If they can set it up where they can do a lot of it through patching or through, hey guys, here's a new etc. peripheral, but and it's just a simple plug and play, mm-hmm. I think that would be okay. It's a fine line to walk, but if they can make the PC user experience easier for people, it's just going to bring more people into PC gaming, which is great because there's so many original games that come out only on PC that console people never get a chance to take a look at.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, at least it depends on the cost of the Steam box, too, or whatever they decide to call it. If it's only $200 or $300, then, okay, I can see spending an extra $200 every couple of years maybe, in order to essentially upgrade my gaming PC.
Yeah. It would be like buying a new console. Just like you would just be keeping up with it, so you're addressing your current console instead of spending $400 on a new one every 5-10 years.
Yeah.
It's going to depend on the entry price and if it's functional for anything else. You know, there's obviously a lot of details we don't have, but the concept is awesome.
Yeah. Well, and then the other question is, if it's going to be, I mean, it's going to need a Windows license on it,
mm-hmm.
most likely, in order to keep the games in their current state without having to reprogram them for a new platform. And unless they work out a decent deal with Microsoft for licensing that's going to get kind of expensive and add to the cost of the hardware. And I doubt Microsoft's going to be too kind to a potential competitor like that.
Yeah, but I guess Valve could always just make their games work with it, and anyone that wants to put their games on Steam will need to make sure that they will work with their Steam box and find a way to kind of bypass it through their own sort of power in the industry.
Yeah.
It's possible. If anyone could kind of not obviously overtake Microsoft, but sort of shoot underneath them and go around them, I would trust Valve to do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll agree with that. If there's someone who can find a way around it, it would be Valve. Yeah. It sounds like it'd be a cool idea, and you know, hopefully we'll be finding out more during GDC to see if it is, if the rumors are true, if they're going to announce something, and if it is going to be everything that we've ever wanted. And, you know, and I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, exactly. I'm excited to hear more, but you know, Valve so rarely does anything wrong. If they come out with a console, I'd probably pick it up day one without too much fear.
Yeah, and especially if they keep those Steam sales going on, because I look at those and I wish I had a computer that would really play games in a way that I'd be comfortable playing them, because mm-hmm. there's so many games there that you can get for so cheap that you would never run out of anything to play. Yeah. I mean, unless you stay home all day playing games, and you know, I have a job, I have to go out and I have to work. But if I had a Steam box, for example, or a computer that could play games comfortably enough for me, I know what I'd be doing for 3 weeks starting next week. You know, I'd sit at a computer or I'd sit in front of my TV and I'd play and play mm-hmm. and play and play and play.
Yeah, it's such a great idea to put Steam anywhere would be fantastic besides my computer.
Like, right.
They put out so much crazy stuff. Binding of Isaac is a perfect example of like a little game that they had. I know it's coming out broader now, but imagine if you could just jump on Steam, buy it for $5 on your TV, not have to worry about any of the install. Oh God, it'd just be fantastic.
Yeah. No, I could get behind that.
Yeah. Could be the end of my, PS3, Xbox loyalty, really. I mean, I would probably just stick with Steam if I could.
Well, that's something that Lindsay was saying, was, you know, if she could play PC games as a console experience, that it would really pretty much put her into PC gaming in a way that she, I don't think, ever has been. PC has never been her gaming platform of choice. Once upon a time, it was mine, but then the cost of upgrading, and it got to be where I didn't want to do it anymore. So I became a console person. But I mean, that could open up a brand new demographic for Steam, for Valve, pulling over a lot of console gamers who want that experience, but want a lot of what PC has to offer.
That's exactly how I am. I'm at exactly the camp that I'm in. You know, even when I had a computer that I could run WoW on and a few PC games, it was such a hassle and a little bit more uncomfortable. I didn't have the setup. I just want to be able to come home, jump on my couch, turn it on, and go. And if you could bring the most of the PC experiences, obviously MMOs wouldn't necessarily work. Depending on the controls, something like StarCraft wouldn't work with the Xbox controller, but they can make some pretty great strides.
Well, and you know, there have been games that have done a really good job. Torchlight, for example, did a really good job of giving you pretty close to the same experience as you had on PC on an Xbox controller. And I think that creative mapping of the controller really helps with that.
I just think it's, you know, speed for something like StarCraft, where you just have to be so fast. The mouse is just more accurate and quicker.
Yeah, I'll give you that. The cursor on using the joystick is not quite the same as having a mouse.
Right. But maybe they'll have a mouse and keyboard set up for it.
Maybe.
Who knows?
I don't know. That When I played PC games, I played at a desk. I had my PC set up, so it was easy for me to have a mouse and keyboard. But if you want to just sit down and kind of lean back in the couch, mouse and keyboard doesn't really fit as easily. You need to have a table in front of you, or you need to have some sort of platform to put the mouse on so there's a flat surface. There's a lot to using a mouse and keyboard with that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that's where it'd be difficult for a console gamer to accept, because, I don't know, like if I'm playing a game, I lean back into the couch and I've got the controller in my hands. I'm not leaning forward to our coffee table.
Right.
I'd rather have something where I can rest my wrists. I can get really into having that leverage and that grounding, I suppose, for controlling the keyboard and mouse.
Yeah, we'll just have to see how it goes. I would make some adjustments if I could still sit on the couch. Or maybe they'll come out with some awesome keyboard mouse peripheral you can just lay in your lap.
Yeah.
Who knows?
There's like a little lap pad to put it all on.
Yeah, there could be some cool stuff going, but goddamn if I don't want to play some of those PC games. Huh. The Steam list, especially the Steam deals, good God.
Some of those are just ridiculous.
Yeah, it really is. It's almost insulting. You know, like both Dead Space games for like $5 over Christmas. Like, how do you not do that?
Yeah.
I think I bought all the Elder Scrolls games, well, I mean, Morrowind and Oblivion for like $10 at one point when they were on sale. I've already got them on Xbox and, you know, PS3, but come on, it was $10. I had to buy it.
Right. It's just another excuse to play them and another way to play them, and those damn deals.
Yeah, exactly. It's vicious. So if they moved into the console market, man, they could. That's why I really think they could undercut Microsoft and Sony horribly if they got into it.
You know what? Now that we keep talking about the deals, I don't want them to bring me a console because I can't afford that. I can't afford all of the money that I would inevitably be spending on Steam games on a Steam console.
Yeah, how many people do you know? Go back to your Twitter feed in December. There were so many people that were complaining about how, oh man, I got all these great deals. It was only $5. It was only $10. Oh shit, I ended up spending $80
right
on Steam.
Yeah, I don't want that to be me, and that's it would be. It absolutely would be.
Yeah, that's
hell. Well, we'll find out this week if I'm going to be broke or not.
God, I cannot wait for that.
Well, anything else you want to add, birthday boy?
I think we're good. I think we're good.
Cool. This has been episode 19 of Marooners Talk. You can find us at maroonersrock.com, facebook.com/maroonersrock, on Twitter at @maroonersrock, on iTunes. And as a quick note, we had a notice from one of our listeners just after we finished recording last week's podcast that the smoke detector in my house was beeping incessantly for the whole thing.
Really?
Apparently, yeah, it was. I've got it sitting here next to me now because I disconnected the damn thing.
I didn't even notice. Weird.
Yeah, it was the low battery beep, although the battery wasn't low. It was the connection to the wire coming out of the ceiling. It's not locking anymore, so I don't know what's going on with that. So that was bothering people. And here's the thing. I don't edit these unless there's something really drastic that needs to be edited. They are recorded, they are uploaded, and they are published. So what we say, and that's just how it goes up. So you're hearing the conversation as it actually happened.
Which is, I think, organic and very realistic.
I do. I like that. You know, no offense to the more produced podcasts, but I don't really like an overproduced or even a normally produced podcast. This is a conversation. People are going to listen into the conversation, and that's pretty much what it is. Yeah, I mean, the most scripting we do is just to lay out four or five topics, and then we just start talking about them. So.
Yep. Which is why our transitions are occasionally awesome and occasionally awkward.
Yeah, or occasionally just really, really bad.
Tenuous at best, yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of things with a lot of guys in them, I don't have a segue for that.
I think that was one of our betters, actually.
I enjoyed it, to be honest. And I completely forgot my point. Ah, point. Point has been recovered. Apparently, when listening, my voice would come in through one of the speakers and your voice would come in through the other speaker on a headset, for example. That was a recent thing over the last few podcasts because I switched our recording mode from mono to stereo.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently it's bothering people to kind of hear only me in one side and only you in the other side. So we're back to mono this week. We'll see how it goes. The smoke detector of doom is in my hands and not functioning. So I think we've got all that solved.
Okay. And didn't hear too much of Lindsay's Mass Effect 2 in the background, so...
She's got it muted because she's a team player.
Although that could have been ambiance, but tell her thank you.
Adam says thanks for having it muted and being a team player.
Whatever.
You got a whatever. Okay. Well, that was our show. So, see you guys next week.
All right. See you. Talk to you later.